To the Wide Outposts by Vainglorious, read by CookieMom6067. The runner fits into the Satidan military well. Ronan wasn't entirely sure he would. Not because the unit doesn't accept him, they do. And not because he came from some strange military apparently full of skinny, scrawny men. He's given up on getting Shepard to pack on any muscle, because the man will just run it off anyway. Ronan doesn't even doubt the man's piloting skills, since he knows shit about that topic. Mostly, Ronan didn't entirely trust that Shepard would obey him. He knew there wasn't a real concrete reason to think that. Even the first few days home from the hospital, when Shepard had hated him and Malena, and had acted more inclined to bite their fingers off than take a friendly hand, the runner had never fought him. Never tried to escape the house, never been violent. Most of the time, he did what he was told, although the orders had usually been gentle statements about how everyone would be happier if Shepard would take a bath or use utensils at dinner time. Also, Malena had kind of been in charge of that. But Ronan had looked at his new flight officer, John Shepard, and been seriously concerned that the man wouldn't listen to him. Part of that maybe was based on the fact that Shepard had been argumentative and hostile while so weak and thin that Ronan could count every one of his ribs. Just because Shepard had never defied him or Malena then didn't mean he wouldn't now, when he's healthy and armed. And something that would probably guarantee Shepard stays in line, taking Malena into the field with the squad, wasn't an option. But for all of Ronan's fears and doubts, it doesn't happen. Shepard obeys him. He even occasionally calls Ronan Master Specialist, his full title only Kel ever uses, and only at formal occasions. Maybe Shepard can tell he isn't entirely trusted. Maybe he's showing Ronan how hard he's trying. Other than a tendency to go after the Wraith with such a pathological ferocity that he has little trouble following orders to do anything else, Shepard does absolutely fine. Ronan doesn't know what Shepard's rank was in his own military, where it positioned him in terms of authority. He kind of suspects Shepard had some authority, or that he didn't and had a problem with authority. Shepard gets along well with the rest of the unit. He and Rakai have settled their differences, mostly because Rakai has tried and failed to kick Shepard's ass a number of times now. Ara likes him, might like him a little too much in a way that will eventually cause Rakai to try and kick his ass again. If nothing else, Ronan bets that will be fun to watch. Marika and Hemi are a little less eager to trust, but they don't have a problem with Shepard. All in all, Shepard fits in well as the new sixth man. Ronan knows the whole squad misses Tyre, miss and resent him at the same time, and it's a little weird that their new teammate comes to them because of the Wraith, when it was the Wraith that took Tyre from them. Shepard could have joined the squad with Tyre there, Ronan thinks. A unit of any size can add a flight officer without any bureaucratic problems. He doesn't know if they would have, though. Without the chaos Tyre caused, Ronan's squad wouldn't have been on stand-down so long. He wouldn't have been home enough to keep an eye on Shepard, and he probably wouldn't have wanted to leave Malena alone with him. And if Tyre hadn't gone Wraith mad and fled, Ronan's squad would never have ended up on the planet where they found Shepard. It's not a particularly fair option if Ronan had a choice about it. He wants Tyre back so badly it makes his teeth ache, but he can't think about condemning Shepard. Not now that he knows him. Malena tells Ronan that caring for Shepard in those first few weeks when he was so frail helped her with her grief for Tyre. Ronan gets that. He doesn't know that he shares it, since he kind of remembers being incredibly angry and sad, and not having much left over to spare for the thin little guy suddenly living in his house. Shepard doesn't show much emotion. He's not shy about letting people know when stuff pisses him off, but that's about it. Ronan doesn't mind, figuring the guy's been vulnerable enough here already. Shepard doesn't wake up screaming when they're in the field. He still has nightmares. Ronan can see him twitching and jerking on his sleeping mat. And when they're home, the screams come back. Neither he nor Malena go check on him anymore. Shepard just claims he doesn't remember the dreams or the screaming, and immediately closes his eyes. Ronan doesn't know how he trained himself not to do it when they're on missions. From a security standpoint, he appreciates it. From every other standpoint, it seems really mentally unhealthy. Having a flight officer on his squad is unexpectedly convenient. They don't have to wait for a ship to become available. They actually get one assigned exclusively to the squad. No more pissy pilots who don't particularly want to listen to Ronan and are more concerned about something happening to their precious ship than accomplishing the mission objective. Well, Shepard is kind of pissy when he's flying. It must be a pilot thing. Ronan generally likes to keep his feet on the ground, but he doesn't mind not having to haul his ass across planets when they can fly there faster. He's not the best judge, but he does think Shepard's a better pilot than the temp ones. The ship doesn't rattle as much, the landings are softer, and he hasn't pulled any totally unnecessary aerial stunts that make Ronan puke. Safety regs require flight officers to wear helmets. Odd, since there's no such wreck on passengers. Shepard snorts rudely when given his. It's leather-covered metal with a chin strap, and even Ronan knows all it will do in a crash is make Shepard's death less messy than his own. "Can I put stuff on it?" Shepard asks, turning the helmet over in his hands. "Yeah," Ronan says. A lot of pilots write shit and glue random pieces of crap all over theirs. Ronan would make fun of it, except he's perfectly aware that he uses his hair in almost the same way. He doesn't know what Shepard will do to his. What Shepard does, and Ronan doesn't even know how, is get two large Urachi goat horns and glue them one either side. It looks totally bizarre. On the back of the helmet, in the space between where the horns attach, Shepard has drawn a symbol in Milena's silver nail polish, a triangle with no bottom, and a small circle above the peak. "This okay?" Shepard asks, presenting his helmet for inspection. Ronan shrugs. "Yeah," he says, trying not to laugh. Shepard doesn't seem like the type, but the horns might actually be important to him. Rakai has no such sensitivity. "What the hell are those?" he asks. "Viking horns," Shepard answers. "On my world, there were ancient warriors who wore hats like these into combat," he pauses. "And a football team." "What's a football team?" Hemi asks. "It's like Usaliti without the blood loss," Shepard says easily. He settles his helmet on his head and strokes one of the horns. "How do I look?" "Like a lunatic," Marika tells him. "Like a Viking Satidan," Ronan offers, mostly because he thinks that's what Shepard wants to hear. For some reason, Shepard grunts in amusement. "Yeah, okay." He thinks a moment and looks pointedly at Ronan. "I'm not putting anything in my hair, though." It turns out Ronan's right about Shepard. The mission it happens on starts out all right. They're selling some weapons to a village that the Wraith visited recently in exchange for medical supply ingredients. The planet is heavily forested, and Shepard has to maneuver free of the ring and then up and above the tree branches. The ship shakes lightly, and the trees scrape loudly against the sides of the vessel. "Sorry," Shepard apologizes when everyone winces at the noise. "Please return your seats and tray tables to the upright position." "What?" asks Ara, clutching her seat and staring out the window. For as much as she has a crush on Shepard, she likes what he actually does for the team the least. "Nothing," Shepard says. "Hold on." "Look at that," Hemi remarks after a few moments. He's talking about the destruction on the ground strikingly visible from above. "Ugh," Marika says. "I know why we're bringing weapons." "How long ago were the Wraith here?" asks Shepard. "A couple months, I think," answers Ronan. "It doesn't look like a culling," Hemi says. He's right, and it also doesn't look like total devastation. That's odd, because the Wraith rarely visit a village and do something other than those two things. No one says anything, and the flight falls silent. Ronan wonders if Shepard saw his world after it was destroyed. "I'll set her down over there," Shepard says eventually, pointing to a clear patch between the forest and the village. "Okay?" He does, the ship loud enough and landing close enough to announce their presence to the village. No one has come to meet them, maybe afraid to get that close to the ship and its thundering engines. "Wraith were here, too," Ara announces, looking at the burned patches of soil surrounding their landing spot. Ronan agrees, and they automatically drift into formation, weapons at the ready. Even though the Wraith are gone and unlikely to come back soon. It's unsettling to walk through the damaged landscape as they get closer to the village. Shepard landed as near to it as he could. "This is creepy," Rakai says, eyeing the blackened shrubbery. "It's giving me the willies," Shepard says, and Ronan has no idea what that means, but it sounds like he's agreeing. Rakai, of course, never misses an opportunity to jump on Shepard. What? He snaps. I don't have a willy. Shepard snorts, then swallows a laugh. If you say so, he says, smirking. Have you been here before? Marika asks Shepard curiously. Shepard shrugs. No, I don't know. Don't think so. He's not looking at her, and his face is shuttered, clearly uninterested in this topic. You must have been a lot of places, Ara remarks. Shepard walks faster. None I ever want to see again. By then they're at the village entrance, and the people can see them approaching. Ronan can tell at a glance why they needed Satidan help. At best, these people have spears and arrows to hunt, not fight the wraith. The village is in shambles. Half the structures burned down or completely flattened. Look friendly, he tells his squad, for whatever good it will do. Shepard, at least, takes off his ridiculous horned helmet and tucks it under his arm. And that's when everything goes to hell. One of the villagers peering at the group does a visible double take. He drops his load of gathered debris to the ground with a clatter and scrambles backwards. Wraithbringer, he yells, sounding shocked. And then he screams it even louder. Wraithbringer! Shepard figures it out faster than everyone else. We have to get the hell out of here, he says, stopping in his tracks. The villagers out in the open are fleeing into their huts, but the men are coming back out, armed with crossbows. Is he talking about Shepard? Asks Rakai, sneering at the crossbows. Ronan hears the strings drawing back and the bows releasing, arrows whistling through the air in their direction. One flies straight at Rakai, striking his flank armor and deflecting into the dirt with a strange thwap. Ow, Rakai says, more surprised than hurt. Hey! He racks his gun, looking at Ronan. Ronan, Shepard says, we have to go. No, Ronan tells Rakai, who wants to start killing people. Retreat, he orders, before one of those arrows actually finds its mark. Run. Warning fire only. Run they do, arrows hitting the dirt behind their feet until they reach the cover of the forest. Ara and Hemi going backwards with cover fire that's aimed toward the sky. Ronan finally stops behind a cluster of thick trunks. He can hear their pursuers' footsteps, definitely between them and the ship. You have been here before, Marika tells Shepard as they hunker down, keeping her voice casual. Ronan almost tells Marika to shut the hell up. Shepard looks as tense as he's ever seen him. Made friends? Rakai asks sarcastically. You could have mentioned it. Shut up, Ronan says. He didn't know. They're between us and the ship, Hemi reports, which Ronan already knows. We have to run for the ring. That's an even farther distance, and if the villagers have rounded on them already, not going to be any easier than getting back to the ship. And Ronan doesn't have time to think of an alternative or even say anything, because he hears more whistling projectiles. It's smaller and faster than an arrow, and then something sharp stabs Ronan in the neck. He bats it down reflexively, ends up holding a tiny dart in his fingers. His neck is tingling, and the next thing he knows, Ronan is face down in the dirt, about to pass out. He hears the thumps of his squad hitting the ground around him, and that's all. Ronan wakes up in a cage. He looks frantically for his squad and only finds Ara and Hemi pressed up against the bars next to him. They both look pale and drugged, eyelids blinking like they just woke up too. The next thing Ronan looks for are his guns. Those are gone. But he can feel the weight of most of his concealed blades, and more importantly, his tiny disc-shaped radio on the side of his coat. What happened? He asks Ara and Hemi. Sleep darts, Ara says. Cheaters, Hemi concurs, even though Ronan agrees that it's an utterly cowardly way of fighting. That's not really the point right now. Where is everyone else? Got away, Hemi says. I'm going to stop making fun of that full body armor they all wear. Shepard? Ronan checks. Shepard doesn't wear full body armor, and he's much less good at following retreat orders. Rakai had him, Ara tells him, which makes sense. By the neck. That makes more sense. I saw them as... She waves a flat palm in front of her eyes, miming unconsciousness. Been radio silence for a while, Hemi says, flashing the disc-shaped radio transceiver he has concealed in his palm. Anything? Yelling, Ara says, making a face. It sounded like Shepard didn't want to obey Rakai's orders. Which were? Go to the ring, she says, and it's Ronan's turn to make a face. That's when the village leader shows up. He's an older, white-haired man, and it looks like he barely survived the recent wraith attack. Some younger men bring him on a litter, and Ronan can tell at a glance that one of his legs is mangled. The litter bearers gently place it on the ground before the cage, and the old man struggles into a sitting position. Betrayers, he says, glaring darkly at his prisoners. We ask for aid, and you come here with a wraith-bringer? Ronan rises to his feet, jerking his chin at Ara for her to join him. She's a good negotiator at trade missions and might be able to talk their way out of this. Keturah, Ara begins, but he interrupts her. That man killed my only daughter. He is responsible for the deaths of over half this village. Keturah is very, very angry. Ronan no longer thinks Ara will get them out of the cage with only words. The wraith killed your daughter, Ronan corrects him. Killed your people. Because the wraith-bringer brought them here, the leader yells. His name is John Shepard, Ara says, drawing her shoulders back, and he was just as much a victim as you were. The wraith can't track him anymore. He still lives, Keturah snarls, and my daughter does not. Ronan feels this line of arguing isn't going to get them anywhere. Where are the rest of my men? He asks. They fled, the leader says, sneering, like cowards with the wraith-bringer. Fled where? To your flying machine, Keturah says. It's only a matter of time before my warriors find it and break down its doors. They made it back to the ship, Hemi says from his sitting position, more to Ronan than Keturah. Keturah ignores him. I have told them I will spare your lives if they return the wraith-bringer to me. I will release you all. I only want him. That's not going to happen, Ronan says. Keturah's face gets even darker and angrier. Then you will all be given to the wraith. What? Asks Ara sharply. What do you mean by that? Ronan's eyes follow the man's old wrinkled hands into his cloak pocket, where he sees a small, ominously blinking electronic device. They promised that if he ever came back and we captured him, we would be forever free from culling in the future, Keturah says. They gave me the means to contact them if the man who they followed here returned. They promised to spare us forever. Ronan has a little trouble following all of that, mostly because it's almost too stupid to believe. If you call them back, he says, they'll just kill everyone who survived last time. Keturah isn't listening. Because I am merciful, he says, if your men turn the wraith-bringer over to me, I will release you before the wraith arrive. He refuses to listen to anything else. Even Ara, who somehow is managing to come up with something besides how this crazy old man has sentenced Ronan's team as well as his own people to death. The younger men carry Keturah away, back toward the village huts. What was that thing? Ronan asks Ara, in his pocket. It looked like a transmitter, Hemi answers, apparently able to see from the floor, and it looked activated. Ara's face is hard and serious. We don't have much time. She glances at the guards who stand at a distance from their cage. We need to leave immediately. If Rakai, Marika, and Shepard made it back to the ship, Hemi begins. They'd have gone back to Satita, Ara interrupts. Keturah made it sound like it's just sitting out there. She shakes her head. It doesn't make sense. It makes sense to Ronan, in that he's pretty sure the reason their ship is just sitting out there is because Shepard's the only one that can fly it. He's not going to leave us behind, Ronan says. Ara looks confused. Rakai would follow your orders, she says. Ronan nods. Shepard won't follow his. Her eyes go wide with understanding. Oh. Keep watch, Ronan orders, backing up from the bars and joining Hemi on the floor. The guards miss the radio the first time, so he can't let them see him using it. He brings his sleeve up to his face like he's resting his chin in his hands. Rakai, he says softly into the transceiver. The village leader called the wraith. You need to get back to Satita now. For a second, there's only silence. Then there's static and fumbling noises, followed by Rakai's voice. Called the Wraith? What? How? There's no time, Ronan answers. There really isn't. With how active the Wraith have become recently, a hive ship will be on them before nightfall. Put Shepard on. There's no guarantee that Shepard will listen to Ronan, but it's the only thing he can try. Rakai doesn't reply, and Shepard doesn't come on the line. Instead, there's a few seconds of strange silence. Shepard's not here, Rakai says finally. What? I dragged him back to the ship, Rakai says defensively, and he flew it halfway back towards the ring, just to get away from the soldiers chasing us. But then he landed, said he wouldn't leave you guys behind. Too bad, Ronan snaps. We fought, Rakai continues, and now he sounds embarrassed. He stabbed Marika with one of those damn needle things, and she's still asleep. Ronan waits, and he tied me to the passenger seat. He went to turn himself in, left about 20 minutes ago. Oh, says Ara, sighing. She's eavesdropping on Ronan's radio, periodically looking back at the guards. You free yet? Ronan asks Rakai. Almost, Rakai grunts immediately. He can't tie good knots, but he tied a million shitty ones. A plan forms in Ronan's head. There's no way off this planet before the Wraith arrive, not if their only pilot has undertaken a suicide mission. The Wraith will kill every single person they can find when they come, which he'd have thought Shepard would know. Rakai, he orders, start unloading the weapons and ammunition we brought to trade. Bring as much of it as you can, as close as you can to the village, without engaging the people. Yes, sir, Rakai says automatically, even though he has no idea why. See if there's something in the med kit to wake Marika, Ronan adds. What's the plan? Rakai asks, but Ronan could see the same question on Ara and Hemi's faces. The Wraith are coming, Ronan tells them all, and we're going to kill them. It takes another 10 minutes after Ronan speaks to Rakai for Shepard to reach the village. In that time, Ronan has Ara and Hemi covertly slice through the wooden bars of their cage while he readies himself for the next step. He can see their weapons, piled off to the side by the guards, and those will be a start, but he needs some of the higher caliber stuff they brought to trade. Shepard surrenders to Keturah before Ronan even realizes he's arrived. He's alerted to the man's presence by the village leader's voice. Keturah is carried on the litter again, set down a little distance from the cage. Behind him, two guards have hold of Shepard by the arms. The Wraithbringer has more honor than I expected, Keturah says, sneering. But as I promised, I will release you. Ara rockets to her feet. No! She cries. Ronan stays on the ground, keeping his reaction off his face. He looks at Shepard between the bars, trying to catch his gaze. Shepard won't meet his eyes, focusing somewhere past the cage. Hemi and Ronan stand, and Keturah suddenly looks hesitant, like he just realized just how large and angry the people in his cage are at him. You will abide by his sacrifice, Keturah tells them, or I will let the Wraith have you as well. That gets a reaction out of Shepard, who tenses in the guard's arm. We had a deal, Ronan hears him snarl at Keturah. These are good people. They had nothing to do with what happened here. I do not trust them, Keturah retorts. So he hasn't gone totally crazy. Convince them to leave without incident, and I will let them go. The guards haul Shepard before the cage, while Keturah stays at a safe distance. Ronan crosses his arms and waits for Shepard to explain himself. Hey, Shepard says slowly, eyes finally meeting Ronan's. His body is stiff, and it looks like the guard's grip is hard and painful. I'm sorry, he says deeply. It looked different. It was dark when I was here before. He pauses, gives a choked, terrible laugh. And there was a big, thriving village. I didn't recognize it. We know, says Ara softly. Ronan stays silent. I shouldn't have stayed, Shepard continues. His gaze is distant again, as if horrible scenes from his memory are playing out behind his eyes. I was in really bad shape, and I didn't know yet. He tries to bring one hand to touch the surgical scars that start at the back of his neck, but the guard holding his left side jerks his arm back down. I wasn't sure they could track me, I only stayed one night. He shakes his head and blinks hard. I am so sorry. What happened here was my fault. You have to let me take responsibility for it. Ronan waits a second. Then he nods. Okay. Ara goes stiff with outrage, but one look at Ronan's severe face shuts her up. Hemi doesn't look any happier, but he knows better than to challenge Ronan in a situation like this. Keturah is appeased. Release them, he orders. One guard lets go of Shepard and walks toward the cage door, so Ronan pretends like the bars are still intact. The door gets unlocked and swings noisily open. The path out passes Shepard, and Ronan eyes it carefully. You will switch places, Keturah says, and then you and your men will leave. Ronan tilts his head, indicating Ara and Hemi should walk before him. He glances at the guards by the door and then at the one holding Shepard. Ara and Hemi should be able to read his orders without him having to say a word. They all walk slowly away from their cage, following a line that will bring them past Shepard, who's looking at the ground. It's better that way, because if he were paying attention, he might figure out what Ronan's going to do and try to stop him. Ronan waits until he's parallel with Shepard. Now, he says, so softly that Keturah won't hear it. The guards will, but it doesn't matter. Ara all but flies backwards to the guard by the cage and kicks him in the chest before he even realizes she's there. Hemi has Shepard's guard by the arms in the next second, promptly drops him to the ground and pins him there. He puts one foot so it hovers over the man's neck. For his part, Ronan grabs Shepard hard. The guy wasn't looking, and even if he was expecting a rescue attempt, it wasn't this. No, Shepard gets out, and then Ronan has his arms pinned and a sharp curved blade pressed right against his throat. Shepard grunts and does a stupid little dance move with his feet trying to sweep Ronan down. In response, Ronan forces Shepard down on his knees where he can't kick anymore. He keeps the man's arms held and the blade steady against his neck, his own body draped over Shepard's back. No, Keturah yells. What are you doing? I'm going to kill him, Ronan says, angling the knife so it looks even nastier. What do you think the Wraith will do when they show up and he's already dead? Guards! The closest ones are out of commission, but Keturah's command sends men at a distance scurrying nearer. Shoot me with one of those darts, and I promise he'll be dead before I go down, Ronan warns. Ronan, Shepard gasps. The knife is so close to his skin that the movement of his throat almost makes him bleed. What are you doing? Stop it! Shut up, Ronan orders. He increases his grip and Shepard jerks in pain. I thought you wanted to die. Shepard doesn't say anything, and his body goes slack in Ronan's grip. He's pretty sure it's just a trick, so Ronan doesn't let up. You have three choices, Ronan tells Keturah. I slit his throat and the Wraith come and kill everyone here. I don't kill him, and the Wraith come, and they still kill everyone here. Or we can stop fighting each other and use the weapons my squad brought to kill the Wraith together. That's your plan? Shepard mutters in disbelief. Ronan is sorely tempted to thump him in the head, but he doesn't have a free hand. Fighting the Wraith is impossible, Keturah says instantly. He pulls the transmitter out of his coat. I promise them. The Wraith do not keep promises, Ara says. They only kill. If you don't stop this madness, you're going to kill your entire people. Hemi jumps in on that note. You're the Wraithbringer, he accuses. Not him. That strikes Keturah like a physical blow, and Ronan can actually see him waver on the litter. Even better, an outraged murmur comes from the gathered crowd of villagers watching the scene. We came here to give you weapons, Ronan says, so you could fight them next time. Nothing's changed since this morning, except that you know when the Wraith are coming. Let's kill them together. What was the name of your daughter? Ara asks. Lenore, the man answers. Her name was Lenore. What would Lenore want you to do? Asks Hemi. Not this, Ronan answers. Keturah is raising his pale, wrinkled hands to his face. He suddenly looks horrified, like his daughter's name has changed his madness from rage to grief. What have I done? He says slowly, the transmitter dropping from his fingers onto the ground. I cannot protect my people. "We can," Ronan tells him. "Let us." "Will you?" asks Keturah, "after what I have done?" "Yeah," Ronan promises. "We'll kill the wraith or die trying." Keturah stares at him for a second. Then he raises a palm toward the worried crowd of villagers gathered around him. His head dipped, Keturah waves their bows and blowguns down. "They are not our enemies." Immediately, Ara and Hemi release the guards they've downed. Ronan is slower to free Shepard, but not because he fears Keturah. Keeping hold of Shepard, Ronan stands and pulls the man upright as he does. Shepard tenses up, unsure what he's doing. Ronan grips the knife tightly and then jerks it away, dropping it back into the sheath inside his coat sleeve. He finally lets go of Shepard and gives him a hard shove away. The runner staggers, nearly falls, but finds his footing. Shepard straightens up, pulling his rumpled clothes back in order and acting like the entire village isn't staring at him. "I told you," he says to Keturah lowly. "I told you these were good people." Unfortunately, that was the easy part. Keturah's people understand the situation immediately. The wraith are coming and they need to fight, but bravery only goes so far. There's no time to teach them battle tactics, no time to train them how to use the weapons. Ronan has Keturah evacuate the village of everyone who can't or shouldn't fight. The very old and the very young, the frail and the sick, and pregnant or nursing mothers. Marika, awake now but very woozy and furious at Shepard, escorts the trail of refugees to the ring. They may not make it out in time, but the forest is still safer, and Keturah, both old and injured, should go with them. But he refuses, ruefully fingering the still-blinking wraith transmitter that started this mess. "It will be suspicious," he says. "I must remain." Ronan doesn't argue with him. Ara and Hemi get weapons distributed to everyone. They don't have exactly enough. Arrows and the sleep needles won't work on darts, but Ronan thinks they'll at least irritate the drones. Might even take them out. Rakai delivers a very quick weapons orientation. Find the wraith, point your gun, open fire. They can't get more complicated than that. "There'll be a hive ship," Shepard says softly, while Rakai is demonstrating how to reload. It's the first thing he's said to Ronan since he took the knife down from Shepard's throat. Shepard looks worried, eyes on the bows and arrows some of the villagers are still holding. "Isotopic pulse cannon missile," Ara says, overhearing. She steeples her fingers and then spreads them wide. Boom.
"We have one?" Ronan asks, surprised.
"Yeah, just one, though," she grimaces. "I won't miss." Shepard nods once, but doesn't look all that relieved.
"Just one hive," Ronan checks.
"I think that's the rule," Shepard says.
"Rules?"
Shepard makes an ugly face. It's a game to him.
"Him?"
Now really isn't the time for Shepard to spill his guts, but it's coming out anyway. "I call him Paul. He has," Shepard strokes his face, "stuff like a walrus. So I went with beetles." Ronan doesn't follow any of that and doesn't try to. "He was trying to feed on me, decided it was more fun to watch me run," Shepard finishes.
"We'll kill him," Ara says comfortingly.
"I'll kill him," Shepard says. "Leave him to me." Ara and Hemi nod, but Ronan doesn't. Shepard actually grabs his shoulder. "He's mine." Ronan doesn't think he can possibly understand what it means to Shepard to kill that thing, so he dips his head. "He's yours." He tips his chin at the rifle sitting at Shepard's feet. "Load your weapon." Shepard holds his gaze for a second, then drops to his knees to open the barrel. "Think we got a chance?" Hemi whispers, when Rakai finishes the instructions and joins them in the impromptu officer circle at the front of the gathered armed civilians.
"Hell yeah," says Rakai.
"We got 5 Satidans, and whatever the hell Shepard is."
"Earthling," Shepard says from the floor where he's racking his gun. "U.S. Air Force."
They put Shepard back in the cage, his rifle concealed under a blanket. Ronan hides in the nearby underbrush, and the rest of the squad disperses with civilians into the forest. Old injured Keturah sits on his litter next to Shepard's cage.
They don't know when the hive ship will get here, but Shepard guarantees it will be soon. It looks, hopefully, like the sacrifice this wraith named Paul should be expecting, up until the part where Shepard blows his head off. It happens before nightfall. Ronan can hear Ara on his radio announcing her tracking equipment has a massive vessel in orbit. Marika reports the ring is on and engaged to prevent anyone escaping. In the next second, there are 7 ugly drones standing all around Shepard's cage. "Hey, buddies," Shepard says lowly. His hands are under the blanket. "Long time no see." Shepard didn't say anything about wanting to kill these guys by himself, so Ronan stands up in the bushes and helps. There's odd, awful silence for a few seconds between when Shepard and Ronan stop firing and the last drone's body hits the earth. Then, somewhere up in the sky, Paul figures out what's happened. Shepard's out of his cage and walking, gun up, towards Ronan in the forest when the next dozen wraith boots hit the ground behind him. He flicks his eyes at Ronan. "This is the running part," he says. They both take off, alternating turns of putting as much distance between them and the wraith and running backwards while shooting. Keturah can't run, but Ronan hears the handgun they gave him firing until he's out of sight. He doesn't think about it after that. Ronan gets a glimpse of what 7 months of Shepard's life was like. It's different, though. He isn't alone. The wraith chasing after him encounter Ara, Hemi, Rakai, and Ronan, or any one of the civilians holding Satidan weapons, and Keturah's people aren't doing too badly with their own weapons. It takes about 6 arrows to bring down a drone, and it looks like those sleep darts work on wraith, too. He's waiting for the wraith darts to appear in the sky, but it doesn't happen. Shepard catches him watching the clouds and shakes his head. "I think that's cheating," he says, then turns around and blasts the 3 wraith coming up the path. Ronan can only hope the hive's weapons are also cheating. It's still a battle. Ronan is bleeding, and he sees people going down and not getting back up. His team keeps checking in, thankfully, still alive in their positions across the forest. Ronan follows Shepard. He doesn't care that the man survived this by himself. Shepard doesn't have to do that today. Paul can't track Shepard this time either. Instead, he sends creepy-looking orbs that float in the air, racing quickly through the tree branches and swerving around tree trunks. They're hard to shoot, but Hemi quickly discovers grenades work on them just fine. But Shepard grabs one out of the air, holds it up to his face like a radio transceiver. "Come and get me," he snarls. "Village Square, come and get me." Then he smashes the orb to the forest floor. Shepard's face is streaked with blood, and it looks like one of the drones managed to do some damage to the left side of his torso. He glances at Ronan before he takes off, back in the direction of the village. Shepard doesn't say anything, but his eyes are screaming that this is the part he has to do himself. Ronan considers this briefly, then follows him. He calls Rakai and Hemi to follow too, and tells Ara to get the isotopic pulse cannon missile ready to go. Paul the Wraith is waiting for Shepard in the village square. Shepard, the lunatic, drops his gun. He charges the Wraith and drives him to the ground. After that, it's a fight. Ronan has never seen a Wraith and a human brawl like this. It's not like normal, not about feeding. He doesn't consider Wraith men, they're monsters. But Shepard fights this one like that's all he is, an ugly, evil man. Shepard is getting his ass kicked. The Wraith is not a man. It's a monster, and it's stronger than Shepard. The 4th or 5th time Shepard is thrown violently to the ground, he can't get up. Paul the Wraith is smirking, striding triumphantly towards Shepard's crumpled body. He has his feeding hand out, poised to strike Shepard's heaving chest. Ronan intervenes. He glances at his battered and bruised squad, and they read his mind. Every gun leveled squarely at the wraith advancing on Shepard. "Take out the hive," he orders Ara in a whisper. Almost instantly, the loud high whine of the isotopic pulse cannon launching sequence fills the air. It's a deafening weapon, even though Ara and the equipment are far, far away. Paul halts in his approach to Shepard, chin rising sharply. He doesn't recognize the sound. No wraith has ever lived to tell another about it. Ronan can't hear anything over the pitch,
but he can see that Paul is alarmed, asking Shepard what's happening. In response, Shepard props himself up on skinned elbows and spits out a mouthful of blood. Ronan reads his lips. "Your turn to run," Shepard says, the corners of his mouth tugging up. Ronan takes that as permission and opens fire. Rakai and Hemi follow suit. Their bullets riddle the wraith's body, sending it flying backwards until it lies limp and soaked in blood on the ground. Ronan doesn't stop firing until his weapon is empty, and neither does anyone else. The deafening whine of the cannon suddenly stops, and for a moment there's no noise, and then the isotopic pulse cannon missile detonates the hive somewhere above the clouds. It's more vibration than sound, the ground and the trees shaking like crazy as red and purple explosions bloom in the sky. It ends quietly. Ronan hauls Shepard up off the ground. Rakai immediately puts a pressure bandage around his chest, and Ronan can see the enormous amount of blood soaking the ground where Shepard had been lying. Keturah is dead, but so are the Wraith and the Hive that killed so many of his people. What had remained of the village after the first time is gone, completely destroyed in this second battle. But there are survivors to rebuild, and these people got their own vengeance today. Marika reports that the ring is disengaged and that they can use it again. There's no time for celebrations. Ronan can tell Shepard needs to get to a hospital immediately, and that's probably true of Rakai and Hemi, too. "Think you can stay conscious long enough to fly us home?" Rakai asks Shepard, supporting him as they trudge back to the ship. Marika and Ara are waiting for them there. Shepard nods, but his skin has gone pale and clammy. Rakai and Ronan are propelling him forward. "Good," Rakai says, "because I owe you a beating for earlier." "Me too," chimes in Marika, but she looks more worried than angry. They practically pour Shepard into the pilot's seat, and Ronan thinks that after surviving this day, they'll die in a plane crash on the way home. Miraculously, Shepard can still fly while half dead. He maneuvers the vessel carefully up and over the trees, back to the ring. The inside of the ship is quiet except for everyone's labored breathing. Ronan realizes how much his own body hurts, pats himself down, and discovers his clothes are unsettlingly wet with warm blood. "What do we say?" Hemi asks. "At the debriefing?" "Spontaneous wraith encounter," Ronan says. "Kel doesn't need to know about any of this. Successful with the help of our allies." "Cool," says Rakai as they enter the rippling horizon. There is no immediate debriefing. Shepard passes out the moment the ship hits the launch pad, actually sends it skittering forward uncontrollably until the auto-landing system catches it and locks it in place. They all go directly to the hospital. Ronan doesn't think he really needs to. Probably just a visit to the base clinic would do it. Milena can stitch him up when he gets home. But nobody else agrees with him, and the entire squad gets tied to gurneys and airlifted to the trauma hospital. And, of course, Milena is the doctor that unloads Ronan's aero ambulance. Her eyes go enormous when she realizes it's her husband on the gurney. "I'm okay," he says, because they shoved an IV in his arm on the way over that made him feel more tired and less hurt. "You said it was a trade mission," she accuses, holding a diagnostic scanner by his head. "It was," he retorts mildly. "We traded." Then Milena catches sight of Shepard in the gurney behind him, and the guy does look worse, practically green, and with a breathing stabilizer coming out of his mouth like a fountain. She leans down and kisses Ronan on his torn lips, then races over to Shepard. Ronan can tell he isn't awake, but Milena pets the side of his face anyway and tries to find a spot on his cheek that isn't bruised. Ronan can't hear what she asks the doctor examining Shepard, but her reaction is a relieved sigh. She's coming back toward Ronan, but he can't stay awake for her to get here. He just smiles at her and goes into the swirling nothingness. Ronan wakes up in the same hospital room as Shepard, not surprisingly. He's a little concerned with how much he hurts, and totally baffled by the number of bandages he finds on his body under the blanket. Somehow he didn't notice those wounds in the heat of battle. Shepard's still green, but he looks a lot better. He's awake before Ronan, and trying to twist free of the various apparatus hooked into him. Despite the time he spent in the hospital when he arrived on Satita, Shepard still doesn't understand any of the medical equipment and always wants it off. And Milena knows that, and it looks like she actually locked the tubing down so Shepard can't get it out. "Hey," says Ronan, after silently watching Shepard struggle for a while. Shepard turns his head toward Ronan's gurney. "Hey," he says, sounding hoarse. Ronan cranks his bed into a sitting position, discovers the muscles in his abs are really, really pissed off at him. Shepard watches him, unable to do the same because Milena disabled the mechanism. "Good fight," Ronan remarks. Shepard looks like hell, and there is no way he's getting out of that bed for a long time. Shepard gives up on yanking the IV straps and examines his bandaged hands. "Yeah," he says, looking at Ronan over his gauze-covered fingers. "It was." "But it doesn't happen again," Ronan says, totally sincerely. He means all of it. The wraith that destroyed Shepard's world and made him a runner is gone, but the suicidal runner has to be gone, too. There's a beat while Shepard blinks, his pale eyelids staying shut a little too long. "Yeah," he says finally. "I know." "Okay." Ronan moves on quickly. "You okay?" "Yeah." Shepard gives a frustrated kick under the blanket where his legs must be trapped, too. Ronan can tell the movement hurts, but Shepard does it again anyway. "I just want to go home."